MSW Media.
Hi there, I'm Claire Copey of SOM TV, well known as the American Wino.
Wait a minute, Claire, I'm the American Wino.
Damn it, Dan, I didn't see you standing there.
Write your own book.
I don't wanna.
What show are we on right now, by the way?
Oh, right now? We're on Drink... Fuck, why am I so bad at this?
What's the name of the show?
I don't know. It's
You've
what we're
on
drinking.
The show a bunch of times.
I'm sorry. But now we have a script, and I like it. Okay, let me do it again. Take three. What we're drinking with Dan Dunn. Jesus Christ. Fire me.
No, that's it. That's the promo.
No.
No, no. That's gonna be the promo.
Well, pour yourself a glass. Sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. But this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn. Oh yeah.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Dan Dunn. This is What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn. And joining me today, boy, old friend of the show. She was on one of the earliest episodes that we had. I don't even, might have been pre-COVID. It might have been in the beginning of COVID. I don't recall. It shattered my brain, that whole pandemic. But she is one of the leading authorities on wine in these United States. Certainly who I know.
If not the world.
If not the world. And, if you watch SOM TV, and who doesn't watch SOM TV, she's the biggest personality on that whole thing, according to me. She did tell me to say, no, that's not true. But she is, and she knows wine better than anybody. She's from Chicago. What else? Favorite color is what?
Oh, it depends on the day. Right now, feeling kind of like a nice burnt sienna.
Burnt sienna?
It's very warm.
Claire Copey.
Hi. Dan Dunn.
And it is Copey.
It is Copey.
Because for a long time, it was Copey in my mind. And you wouldn't,
oh, that's
and
right.
You didn't correct me either.
No, because so many people have done that, and I'm just like, whatever, I don't care anymore.
Okay. So you're here, and by the way, here, we're at Hatchet Hall, and this is technically Culver City. I think
it's
right on the border of Mar Vista, Culver City, Venice. Hatchet Hall is a restaurant that's been around for about 8 years now, and recently was awarded a Michelin star.
Ooh.
Very fancy. Have you eaten here before?
No.
What?
I didn't even know they got a Michelin star.
Oh,
good for
man.
Them.
Well, I'm going to bring you here then. We're going to eat here sometime. You just can't go wrong. Hatchet Hall.
Michelin star.
And they have an amazing wine program as well here, which made me think we're going to do our wine, summer wine extravaganza. And this is part one. So everybody knows how this is going to work. We're going to have five wines today that Claire and I are going to sample and tell you all about that you will be needing to add to your collection this summer. And then we'll do another episode. The next one will air tomorrow, and that'll be the other five wines.
Oh, no, darn.
Does that work for you?
I suppose.
Yeah. But first, let's quickly, I want to catch up with you. So since we last saw you on the show, which was at least a year and a half, 2 years ago, what have you been up to?
Was it before COVID?
It was,
I don't remember.
Maybe it might have been the beginning of COVID, yeah.
Okay.
Or before.
I have no sense of time anymore. So at that time, I was working as the wine director at Sushi Note.
Yes.
Okay.
See, but I you were also at SOM TV.
I was also at SOM TV in a more like limited capacity. I was a cast member on some shows. We did this wonderful show called Sparklers. We're going to gear up for season two and shoot that later this year. It's a food and wine pairing cooking competition show. And it actually got a nomination for a James Beard Award against, like, Top Chef. Top Chef ended up winning. But it's a good show. No, it was an honor, honestly, to just be nominated for that first season of the show along.
I watched the whole thing. And so basically it was set up north where you guys were in.
First we were in Oregon, and then we went to Sonoma.
Yeah, and
insane.
They, awesome. You and your fellow contestants would cook.
We would
and you'd have to pair food with
a wine. Sparkling wine.
Yes.
So, oh yeah, that was nice. One episode was Krug. Another episode was Ruinart. Another was lovely traditional method sparkling from an Oregon producer called Lytle Barnett. Very good.
And who won again? I'm trying to...
That would have been me.
That's correct.
Somehow I pulled that out of my...
I remember texting you after. I'm like, hey, you did it.
I still don't know how.
Yeah.
I still need to take that trip to France, too, hopefully next year.
That's right. You got a trip. That's why. I think that's why I texted you. I'm like, I did. I literally said, so who's going with you?
It's a trip for two? Yeah, I had a lot of friends all of a sudden come out of the woodwork. They're like, oh my God, we need to catch up. How have you been?
And look at me, this friend I am, I bring you to Hatchet Hall when they're not actually serving food.
Seriously. Yeah.
Well, had I known you hadn't been here, we'll come
dangling
back.
A
we'll
Michelin
come back.
Star.
So you won that and you've since been sort of elevated a little bit at SOM TV.
Yes, I'm working full time with them now. I do a whole bunch of different projects with them. I'm on camera quite a bit as a host. Like I mentioned, we have season 2 of Sparklers, which we'll be filming later this year, which hopefully I'll get to judge. Or host.
You're not going to be a contestant.
Yeah. No. I was originally told I was supposed to be a judge on season 1, and that changed. And I'm like, this time, I'm sitting back, and I'm judging, I'm eating, I'm drinking.
You're going to relax.
Very good at judging.
Okay.
So we've got that. We've got a bunch of other cool projects. I went to Israel last year and filmed that. So we're editing that together and piecing it together as a wine trip to Israel. It'll be really
cool. How are the Israeli wines?
Some of them are very good. Very good. They don't get enough attention or marketing. I think a lot of people associate Israeli wine with Manischewitz, which is unfortunate.
So the wines in Israel were good?
Yes. Some really, really beautiful wines. And it's got such a great, crazy history. And seeing all those religious sites and seeing ancient, wine presses. This is one of the areas that, first began making wine. We think it started in Armenia, Georgia, and then slowly spread. But it's pretty crazy to be standing in places that, Jesus was, and
did you know Jesus apparently had a thing with wine too, where he could reproduce.
He had a whole thing. That was
he could just look
miracle.
At it and go, bam!
His first miracle was changing water into wine. So I think there's something there that he's like, let's work some magic.
Let's do something here. So all right, well then maybe this you give me an idea. Maybe one of these days we have to do an Israeli wine.
That'd
episode
be cool.
Of this,
yeah. I'd be very down for that.
Okay, but these wines, yes. None of these are from Israel, and again. This is our summer wine extravaganza.
Ooh, yeah.
It's an extravaganza.
It is.
It's not an ordinary event. Okay?
It's real.
People are, I don't know, you can't, you at home can't see this. There are people dancing in the streets right outside of Hatchet Hall right now.
Some without tops.
Yeah. Topless. So we got 5 wines here. So what do you want to start with first?
Oh, should we start with Bubbles?
Let's do it.
In honor of Sparklers, I think we should start with Bubbles.
So we're going to do the Banshee.
The Banshee.
10 of Cups Sparkling Brut.
Traditional method. So this is made the exact same way as champagne, where the secondary fermentation occurs completely in this bottle, as opposed to in a tank. And that's how Prosecco is. Oh, this is not fun to open. Uh-oh. She gonna be a bitch. I should point this right at you, yeah?
Yeah. I'm about to get...
Oh, fuck, this hurts.
About to... Do you want me to do it?
Maybe.
Okay.
Get your thumb on there.
Okay.
See what happened to me? I haven't been on the floor of a restaurant in so long. I've gotten weak. But that was always...
Party's on.
We just
look
lost
at that.
All the bubbles.
Okay.
We lost
I'll
all
give
the bubbles.
I'll give, all right, I'm going to pour this. All right, so continue to tell us about this information you were just giving us.
Yes, the traditional method. So it originated in southern France, they think, and then a monk named Dom Perignon picked it up. And brought it up to Champagne, where the region is probably most famous for this method of sparkling production. Where, yes, you have your base wine, your still wine that's already gone through fermentation. It's a complete wine. You probably wouldn't want to drink it on its own, though, because it's very high acid and, even though I love that. So you take that, then you add into that bottle yeast, sugar. Yeast gobbles up all the sugar, dies in the neck of the bottle. There's often something called, it's on the rack called pupitre, and they turn it. Kind of stir up the lees in the dead yeast cells in the bottle, so it gives it texture, it gives it some really cool aromas and flavors, and then they'll remove that plug of dead yeast, top it off with maybe a little bit extra wine, maybe a little bit of extra sugar if you want to have some residual sweetness on it, and then cork it up. And it's expensive, it's time-consuming, laborious.
Here's something I want to clear up.
Yes.
I was on a Should we toast?
I think
this?
We should.
Let's do this. Yes. This is the Banshee 10 of Cups Sparkling Brut. Let's try it, and then we'll talk about it. But I want to clear something up with you before we give the tasting notes. Mm.
Oh, yeah.
So I was on the plane recently, and I like to play the trivia games on the plane. Do you ever do this on the back of the plane? It's
the trivia games?
Brain teasers.
Oh, in the American
And I
brain.
Get so competitive. I'm just playing by myself. I'll play this fucking thing for 4 hours. The whole flight from LA to New York.
Oh, dang.
But one of the questions, and it repeatedly kept coming up, champagne was invented where? And it gave options. It was like England, France, but it was saying the correct answer was England. And now I think I know why they said this was because the first sort of secondary fermentation that happened while wine was being shipped from France to England.
Not with sparkling, not with champagne. There was stuff that happened. Well, they had fortified wines that were very popular in England that they were importing from, like, Spain, sherry, Madeira, port from Portugal. And then, especially with Madeira, that went through when it was, like, going across, especially the Atlantic Ocean, over to the Caribbean and to the colonies. It changed because of the humidity, because of the oxidation and everything, and it became what it is now today. That didn't really happen with champagne so much, though. No.
So you're saying it was the quiz on Delta Airlines is incorrect.
Unless there's something that, like, I've completely missed in my studies.
No, I'm with you, because I hit France, and then it said I was wrong.
No,
and I'm like, and I was ready to complain to the flight attendant.
Unless it said
excuse
something
me,
else.
If I hit the button, excuse me.
Like, I have a friend who's a
I got this one right.
You did. No, I have no idea where that's coming from. If somebody can tell me that
reset this? I got this right.
England, interesting.
Maybe if I complained to
and
Delta.
It was secondary fermentation? That's definitely what it said.
It said sparkling wine was invented in, and it was like,
I mean,
Spain,
okay,
England,
well, that's
France.
Sparkling wine is different. That's a possible thing. That wouldn't have been champagne, though. Maybe there was like a little fizziness from, yes, some kind of residual fermentation that was happening in the boat. But as far as champagne goes, that was invented in France.
By the way, what's great about this is we're taping this during the day, and I'm like, we got a dump bucket here, and I'm like, oh yeah, we're doing it. And
so far,
I've already had two big sips of dumping. All right, so let's talk a little bit about this. I made in California, two months in neutral French oak, 24 months on the lees. Can you tell us what that means?
The lees are the dead yeast cells I mentioned. Yes, they gobble up the sugars, they die.
Came out in January of 2022. It's made with Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, and as Claire explained, the traditional method. Let's hear your tasting notes on this.
Well, Dan, I'm getting, it's very citrusy, very, very bright lemon, but like a riper lemon. It's not a super astringent or like pithy lemon, right?
Yeah.
Got some ripeness to it. Orchard fruits, like yellow apple, like biting into a crisp yellow apple. It's got like a little solidity to it as well for me. A little like sea spray kind of.
Sea spray.
Sea spray maybe kind of note, which is nice. A little bit of like some underripe peaches as well, like an underripe white peach. Tangerine as well.
I get like a little bit of a like a biscuit thing. Do you get that at all? Like sort
of. So that's gonna be from the lees, from those dead yeast cells.
Okay.
The biscuit. That brioche, that kind of texture.
Yeah, that's it. That's and it's it. Very vibrant.
Very
I'm enjoying this tremendously. I think it's
90 points
by who?
Wine enthusiast.
Do you want to give it? What do you want to give it?
21.
Let's give it. I got to go in just to
see how
much this costs. I
don't believe in giving things points. Depends on the
day. Yeah, me neither. It's just crap.
I don't want to burp into my microphone.
You can go ahead.
Well,
I'm trying to find out what this costs. Any other tasting notes on this thing?
Ooh.
It's $30.
Okay, that's a good
beans.
Like I said, like this method of sparkling production is pretty laborious. So it's usually
that's what's
pricier.
Making it cost.
That's why Prosecco's cheaper.
Yeah. And this, again, Banshee, Banshee. I don't know. Where do you think the 10 of cups comes from?
The tarot deck.
When the deck shows you the 10 of cups, it symbolizes harmony, joy.
And abundance.
And abundance.
Unless it's flipped upside down, and then it would be discord, anger, and
which we don't want.
Death.
We don't want. This is exactly... This is why we bring Claire to parties. You should see by the end of the night when she gets really dark.
I turn into Aubrey Plaza. I'm just glaring at everyone.
All right, so I'm digging this. This is a great way to start, by the way.
Start, finish.
Let me ask you this. California bubbly versus Old World bubbly. Mm-hmm. Where do you come down on it?
What do I prefer?
Maybe just sort of outline some of the differences between them.
It's so hard not to just be like champagne all the time. There's a time and a place for champagne, I suppose. I think it's all the time. New World tends to, not always, things are shifting, a little riper. So you're typically going to have warmer fruit notes. So like this is a little riper than, say, a champagne or a Franciacorta from Italy. Not always the case because climate changes, changing some stuff. There tends to... No, because you can't really say everything's changing so much. But, I mean, I tend to lean more towards champagne. But, like I mentioned, that Oregon Sparkling, the Lytle Barnett, stunning.
I mean, I've had that Soder, which I think is really good in Oregon as well.
Oh, yeah. They have some good sparkling
up there. It is interesting that you bring that up. Everybody that I've talked to, wine professionals, are saying it's happening so quickly.
The quality shooting up in the new world?
How stuff is changing because of climate.
Oh, yes.
People are not quite sure where it's going to go, which...
No. And it's made it really interesting in, like, when I was blind tasting a lot more, you would get, like, a Burgundy Pinot Noir and then a Pinot Noir from Sonoma or Oregon. And a lot of times they were pretty close together. If it was, like, an entry-level Burgundy, they're pretty close because they're getting a little more ripe over there and we're picking a little bit early over here and trying to make it more in that, you know, lean, elegant style and not the super ripe, plummy, because that's not what Pinot Noir should be.
Okay, so now we started off with the Banshee, and now where do you want to go next? And we've got, look at all these glasses we have. We can just throw
should
these
Should we over. Do, oh, that's a good call, actually. What should we do next? I'm kind of intrigued by this Kendall Jackson low-calorie Chardonnay.
Okay.
I want to know what they're doing to make it low-calorie.
Kendall Jackson, it's not Kendall Jenner, right? She's not involved. Because everything she touches turns to gold.
It sure does. Any of that family.
So KJ, Kendall Jackson, one of the biggest wine companies in the world, they have this low-calorie Chardonnay.
It's low alcohol, too.
Low alcohol. So let's see. Each glass contains only 85 calories.
5-ounce serving, by the way. It says 5 ounces.
5 ounces.
For your 85 calories.
How many ounces would you normally do?
Some at wine bars we used to pour 6 ounces. We were generous, but then 5 ounces is typical.
All right, so 85 calories, 3 carbs, 0 added sugar.
Added.
Go ahead, explain.
Well, there's natural sugars.
Well, natural, grapes. Yeah, exactly. Okay, gluten-free. Well, is it? Yeah, okay. Sugar-free, guilt-free, keto and vegan-friendly.
Vegan-friendly is a thing.
What else could we touch?
You wouldn't think that it would be a thing, but it's a thing.
And it's a lesbian. This one. Yeah, it's also transgender. This wine, yes.
And Dan Dunn got canceled for making jokes.
Okay, yes. And it's only $17 a bottle. So now, first off, right off the top of the bat, I want to get your thoughts on the idea of a low-calorie wine. Is that something that you agree with? Do you think...
If it can be done well, sure. I would love to have less calories consumed with my wine. That'd be great. I could cheat a lot more on my diet.
All right, let's do it. Look at you, diet. Get out of here.
Don't get me
You look
started.
Like you ran here. That's you jogged here from the valley. Run. That's the shape you're in.
I don't run. That's adorable. You watch me run.
Cheers.
It's like a fat kid. Not that anyway.
No, you're in trouble.
I know. There's some fat.
No fat shaming on this show.
I know.
Okay. To me, it's fruity right off the bat. I got a little bit of this. Got some grapefruit on there.
Pineapple. Pineapple.
You getting that?
Oh, yeah.
Delicate. It's not as full-bodied, but it's light to me.
Well, it's definitely light. It's 9% alcohol, and so alcohol does contribute body and texture to a wine.
Which we normally we'd be talking 14, right?
13's a little high. I would say going down to 12, 5.
Yeah, okay,
13. Yeah. I mean, there are plenty of 14% Chardonnays out there, but it's a little high for my personal taste.
Okay.
But so you're losing some of that. It's not particularly high acid either, which I find a little surprising.
Why are you surprised by that?
Because Chardonnay can be a very high acid grape, and I would have thought that...
So the pH is 3.36.
Okay.
Tell us what that means. It's not 4.
It's not 4. It's slightly under 4. pH is just basically the measurement of acidity.
Acidity, yeah, that's what, yeah. So
100% Chardonnay, California. So that means it's just California. It's not a specific area or appellation or vineyard, so it's coming from grape source from all over the state.
All over the state.
I almost said
California. And I mean, look, if you're going to go the two kings grapes here in California, we talked about Pinot, but still the two kings are Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay, right?
Both are very planted.
Yeah.
I mean, Chardonnay is like, it might be the most planted white grape in the world right now. It's everywhere. It's everywhere because it can grow in so many different climates, and it's this very beautiful blank slate of a grape that can be crafted into so many different styles. It's amazing.
Now, when you talk about California Chardonnay, is that one of the knocks you'll hear occasionally? Is that it's buttery?
Yeah, I hear it all the time. I heard it in restaurants all the time. Like, I hate Chardonnay. I don't drink Chardonnay. And I understand there are certain
grapes. You're saying that or people are saying
no,
that?
People are
okay,
saying
I was
that.
Like, I know people you like Chardonnay. Yeah.
And it's, I love Chardonnay. But people generally are being more exposed to the really heavy, over-oaked, rich, buttery, which, you know, like, that is a style that some people really love and enjoy, and you should always drink what you love. But for some people, then that's what they identify Chardonnay as, and it's just not true. So often I would recommend for somebody who's like, I don't drink Chardonnay, I would just give them a taste. I wouldn't even tell them what it was, of a Chablis. So a northern part of Burgundy, very far north, actually, up by Champagne, further away from the rest of Burgundy. And it's cold there. They make very lean, high-acid, mineral, flinty, beautiful expressions of Chardonnay that just would blow people away. And they'd be like, that's Chardonnay? I'd be like, yeah.
It's almost like they don't like the complexity that you get with Chardonnay.
I think a lot of people don't think that there's complexity in white wines at all. I think there's this huge misconception that only red wines can be elegant or, you know, refined or, like, expensive and everything that comes along with that. For some reason, there is this large group of people that are like, oh, I don't drink white wines because they just think of, like, cheap Pinot Grigio, overchilled Sauvignon Blanc. And then you start showing them, like, the huge array of white wines and the huge potential it has. I mostly drink white wine. I okay. really don't drink much red anymore.
Even in the winter?
Even in the winter. So I got to tell you, even when you're cold, like, there is something about, like, a nice, crisp, refreshing glass of rosé or white wine. Even if it's a little slightly richer, you know, white okay. wine. But, yeah, I drink scotch in the winter.
I love that. Okay, so I got to tell you, I'm not noticing anything here that would make me think, I wouldn't certainly go, if you serve me a Diet Coke, I know I'm drinking a Diet Coke, what's missing. There's nothing about this that I'm getting that makes me think that this wine
is half the calories.
So how did they do it? Is it magic?
I honestly have no fucking clue.
You said, well, obviously the alcohol the alcohol level being lower
that
certainly
helps.
Contributes to that.
For
but
sure.
You might have to drink an extra glass to get to reach that buzz level you want to get.
For sure.
But yeah, but it's
for sure.
So 9%. It's okay though.
It's okay. It's a low alcohol. Usually with lower alcohol wines, they tend to have some residual sugar on there. This doesn't really have that. It is creamy. I do see that they're using oak barrels, and I can definitely taste it on there. The vanilla, like that toasted vanilla.
Yeah.
You can definitely taste that on there. But yeah, I don't know how you make low calorie wine.
They're doing it, and for $17 a bottle, you know, I'm on board.
I'm on board too. I like low calories.
I live by the beach.
I gotta bust out. You know?
There's levels of dad bod now that I think are acceptable.
Oh, and are there?
Yeah,
that's
I've
lovely.
Given up on anything other than dad bod. I'm gonna have dad bod, even though I'm not a dad. But I've resigned myself to. I'm going to have dad bod,
You could be a daddy.
Funny example.
That's the whole thing.
Funny example. Last summer, I was out at this place, Bell's Beach House. I think you and I went there.
Yes, we did.
We did. Okay.
We did.
So we hung out there, but this was not the night I hung out with you. I was hanging out with a friend, and we met these women, and they're like younger women than me, certainly, who isn't. And they said, oh, and we hit it off with them, and they're in their 20s, and they're gorgeous, they're model, and they invited me. They said that a bunch of people were going. No, a bunch of them were going to the beach that week, and they're like, we're gonna have like this big beach, and we're all gonna be playing volleyball and everything. And I was like, yeah,
like,
I'm
cool.
in. And I rode my bike down there, and when I pulled up, it was all these like exactly the guys that you think would be hanging out with 24-year-old models. And I like, this is really sad.
You just kept.
I pulled
going,
up
like,
on my bike, and I looked over, and I did. I was like, I'm gonna go.
You should have just gone and been like, what up?
I was like, the shirt. I got two options here.
Yeah, but you're a man.
I can take the shirt off and play volleyball with this. They got 10 packs, these dudes.
Whatever.
Or I can be that guy and be the only guy playing with my shirt on.
Do it. No, you should have taken your shirt off and played volleyball. Screw
them.
And
said, yeah, these are my boobs. They're mine.
You don't have boobs.
I know. Well, in my mind, I do. Anyway, low-calorie wine could be the key. Maybe this summer. I drink a little bit of this KJ low calorie.
If you drink this Kendall Jackson, you too will have a 10 pack and look like a 22-year-old.
I'm going to pull up. God, look at this. Hey.
Like, who wants to play?
Okay, next up we're having
We're going to do the Chamisol Vineyard Chardonnay.
Okay.
From Monterey County. 72% of the grapes are coming from Monterey County. The other 28% are coming from SLO.
Okay.
San Luis Obispo.
So Chamisol Vineyard is one of the first wineries in California to make an unadorned style of Chardonnay.
Unadorned.
That celebrates the variety's innate characteristics. Mm-hmm, okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. sourced, as Claire just said, from Salinas Valley, Monterey County, down to Chamisal Vineyard in San Luis Obispo, also known as SLO.
Slow.
For, you know, the locals like us. This is a 2021 vintage, which was a very dry year.
It was.
Extremely dry year. They only had about 10 inches of rain.
Yeah.
But 8 of those inches came within 24 hours and mostly ended up in the creek.
Yeah.
So what does that do to a wine, having it be that dry?
It makes the vines have to struggle, which is good. You do want the vines to struggle. And I mean, a lot of these places have drip irrigation, so they're doing fine. I would say the fires are more of an issue in California.
Yeah. Especially back then in 21, right?
I mean, that was more like Napa, but yeah. I mean, we've been dealing with drought for a long time, and I think winemakers have acclimated to that pretty well. But any kind of struggle like that, it makes the vines have to dig down deeper, and it makes them stronger, better vines, if that makes sense. They're producing better quality fruit because of that struggle.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
It's more about the quality and less about the quantity with grapes. You want your vines to be producing a little bit less, but for them to be higher quality.
Okay. I love it. Let's try this. Let me get a little nose.
Ooh, that's crunchy. Oh, see, that has a little sea spray too, right? And like chalkiness.
Yeah.
Y'all.
So it says 68% of this is from Monterey County, 32% from SLO.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Monterey's right there on the ocean, so. Mm.
It's 100% Chardonnay, 13.5% alcohol. Mm-hmm. I made 12,000 cases of this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
And I noticed that it says partial malolactic fermentation. Softens the naturally high acidity. This is pretty high acid. You get.
Right there. Right, that thing right in
right
your there,
jaw. Your mouth fills with saliva. But the malolactic fermentation is a kind of secondary fermentation for still wines and sparkling. But it converts a very astringent compound into something called diacetyl, which makes it kind of soft and gives it that butteriness.
Yeah.
So you get a little bit of that in this. Which is
nice. I love that. That thing that happens when you taste the wine, you get the acidity and that you get that your mouth starts to water. That
makes
just,
me happy.
It makes me, yeah. I'm like, today's going to be a good day.
It is going to be a good day.
Yeah.
High acid wines are great.
I think very, it's crisp. It's a clean wine. Mm-hmm. It just feels like there's,
Something fun now, since we're doing all these Chardonnays too, is you can start seeing the characteristics of the grape a little bit, is that the lemon, the apple, that orchard fruit, and you just see it in all these varying degrees. Like some of that fruit is cranked up and it's a lot more ripe, and this it's cranked down and it's a little more underripe and tart. Which is really fun.
Yeah, definitely getting that zesty citrus thing going on.
But this is more pithy and like zest, whereas before it was like kind of a creamier like curd.
That's right. I would say that. The low calorie one we had, which I really enjoyed, this one has more oomph to it.
It's got a little more verve.
It's got oomph and zest and vibrance.
Happy to be here. It's a shiny, shiny thing.
And what are we talking about here for money? Let's see how much this thing costs. We're going to go. Chamisal is.
My guess is this is in the 30, no?
$18.
What?
Get out of here. Come on. I mean, for $18.
It's pretty good.
Come on.
It's pretty good. Are they hand harvesting?
Are they? No, I think they're using feet. It's feet.
Pressed under feet. They're using their feet.
Mainly feet harvested. Yeah.
Wow, that's very labor intensive.
Have you seen My Left Foot, the movie? It's that guy. Push him around in the wheelchair.
And Dan got canceled again.
Well, you know, I heard an interview.
Picks grapes.
Well, I heard an interview with Daniel Day-Lewis, and he said something like he didn't know that he could play that character now, and not an able-bodied character. And I'm sorry if this sounds wrong. I go, who the fuck is going to play that character?
That's true. Well, they also have to be an actor, right?
What was his name? The writer, Christy, who he's playing, was severely, like he had severe cerebral palsy. I'm like,
I'm going to plead the fifth on this.
Are there any actors? Who are you going to get to play that?
I'm not commenting on
You're
any
not doing
of this
Claire's,
anymore.
She's going, this is where I,
any of this
I'm not going to, Dan, I will not let you get me in trouble.
Nope.
Maybe on that note, we'll take a quick break. Claire, by the way, before we take the break, where do people find you on the social medias?
So my Instagram handle is Claire_Kopy. And then you'll find me on SomTV.com a lot. Probably far too much.
Anyway, we're going to take a break and we'll be back with our advertisers. Got something to say to you. And then we got two more wines for part one of our extravaganza.
Ooh, boy, it continues.
Yeah, here we go. Summer is upon us, friends, and summer is the time for sipping on cold, refreshing cocktails made with the best ingredients. If I've said it once, I've said it a gajillion times.
You can buy the best spirits in the world to make craft cocktails at home, but if you use crap mixers, you're going to get crap drinks. That's why I am all about Fresh Victor. Fresh Victor is a line of all-natural, clean-label cocktail mixers that brings the magic of master mixologists into your home. They feature a bunch of unique blends with contemporary flavors designed to suit any palate. All of the ingredients are fair trade sourced. There's no artificial anything. The mixers are produced at a 100% solar-powered juicing plant with absolutely no waste, none. And right now, Fresh Victor is offering a summertime special exclusively for you, dear listener. Simply go to freshvictor.com, fill up your shopping cart, and at checkout, enter promo code FVDAN20. That's Fresh Victor, FVDAN20. To get 20% off your order. Now's the time to bust out the bikinis and bathing suits and to treat yourself to the very best mixers on the market, and that's Fresh Victor. Some of my favorite summertime cocktails are whiskey-based. The Mint Julep, a Gold Rush, a Paper Plane, and the whiskey I turn to as the base in those cocktails is Rabbit Hole. They make bourbon and rye in extremely small batches at their wonderful distillery in Louisville, Kentucky. Rabbit Hole's recipes are totally unique and were created by their founder, Bourbon Hall of Famer Kaveh Zamanian, who spares no expense in making great whiskey. Kaveh and his team have their own cooking methods and use top-of-the-line grains. They never chill filter, and they use barrels that are toasted, charred, and wood-fired, which almost nobody else in the business does. Trust me on this. What you end up with is a line of bourbon and rye with these really rich, deep flavors that are unlike anything you've ever tasted. The forecast for this summer is hot, 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 and I, for one, plan to cool down with some refreshing cocktails made with Rabbit Hole. Please, my friends, come join me.
We're back. Hi.
Oh, hi there. Hi. Didn't see you.
Hi, how are you? Claire Copey of Somm TV. I would also say this. Can I refer to you as our resident, the WWD resident wine guru.
Ooh, I like that.
It's not a paid. It's not a paid position. Oh, but yeah, someday possibly.
Okay.
So Claire is here. We're doing our summer wine extravaganza. This is part one. We got part two coming up tomorrow with five more wines. And Claire has been gracious enough to come out and share her expertise with us. And we've had three wines so far. We've got two left. And let's just get right to it, Claire.
Let's
we've
do
got
it.
What we're gonna do?
Kenny J.
All right, we got Kendall Jackson.
The Vintners. Reserve.
Vintners Reserve 2021. Yes. KJ, of course, is the number one selling Chardonnay in these United
in
States.
America.
It's a very big company, America.
Yeah.
And this is one of their biggest releases. $17 a bottle, which that's kind of the
find it in pretty much every
kind of the sweet
series.
Spot, right, for white wines in that $15 to $30 range.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I agree with that.
Again, 2020 vintage, all 100%. Chardonnay, 13.5% alcohol, pH level 3.41.
Oh boy.
Cheers.
Cheers.
All right.
What you smelling? So we were talking about those, that the tones in the different notes. This is cranking it back up to those riper levels again.
Yeah.
And more oak. So you
definitely
got a lot
definitely.
Of toasty vanilla in this.
I got it right off the bat. I got a little toffee.
Toffee, that's perfect. Like a Werther's caramel too. Like
yes,
that kinda,
that's
yeah,
what
yeah.
I got. All right.
Great note. Great tasting note.
Hmm. Okay, yeah, the butter, the vanilla.
All there.
A little bit of...
tropical fruits again, for me.
Okay.
The pineapple.
What about this?
Mm.
Let me do it one more time just to make sure.
There are no wrong answers, mm-mm. except for whatever you're about to say.
Ready?
Yes.
Apple pie
uh-huh.
with a little scoop of vanilla ice cream on
and
it.
And caramel drizzle.
Oh, that's what I got.
Yep.
It's a little. This is not a dessert wine.
No, it's not
but it made
sweet.
Me think of that.
That's... 100% on the nose.
On the nose.
It's not a sweet wine, but it is a ripe.
Yeah,
wine.
this is a you're having people over, it's a beautiful day outside. You know,
maybe even a slightly chilly evening. Ooh. This is not a hot, I don't think this is for me personally. This is a little richer, so I wouldn't want this on like a scorchingly hot
early
day.
Early evening.
Early evening.
Dusk.
Jesus. If you will. Dusk.
Let's Dusk. The same idea hit us at the same time. Yeah, no, you're right. This is a dusk wine, not a dawn wine. Dusk. Some not people,
High Noon.
There are people I know that would drink it at dawn.
I just realized why they call that brand High Noon, because that's when you drink it at High Noon.
Oh, that you're talking about the whiskey.
Seltzer.
Oh, High West. I'm thinking of.
Would I drink that at noon? At High Noon? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I just had a drink with High West last night. I went to Waldorf Astoria.
Oh, did you?
In Beverly Hills.
Which High West did you have?
It was the rye. They made a variation. They had a variation of an old fashioned that they did there, and they used High West rye.
That's a good rye.
Yeah. So this one.
Anyway.
All right. I think we're nailing it. We got so far. Yeah. This is our fourth one, and this I'm digging this, especially at $17.
Yeah.
How much do you think? I mean, you and I, let's face it, we get exposed to a lot of wine. We get given a lot of wine. Like,
yes.
That's the way it is, right?
That's
with the job. Hey, sorry, if it bothers you, get a new fucking job. Right? You can become podcast host. You could be on SOM TV. It's not my fault.
You could.
Is it my fault?
Study.
No.
Hit the books.
That said, people that don't work in this business that are actually going out and they're buying their wine, how much do you think price versus scores versus where, like, informs how people buy their wine?
I think scores are so interesting to me because I see both sides of the argument with them, like how they're very helpful for consumers that maybe don't have a ton of wine knowledge. Because you look at this huge shelf of all these different wines and it's like, I don't know, this label looks cool, but it got 95 points. But points are also kind of dangerous because it's one person's palate. Like, you might not have the same palate as Robert Parker and what he's scoring on
wines.
I'm
almost certain I don't.
I'm pretty sure you don't. So it's him saying, at this point in time, I think this wine is going to be perfect in this year. I think it's perfect right now. And it's his opinion. And so it's a kind of an interesting. And also, it's always changing. It's wine. It's a living thing. To just slap a number on it is kind of sterile.
There was a documentary years ago, I'm sure you saw it too. I can't remember the name of it, though, where they basically, it was like the anti-Parker documentary.
Oh, really?
Where it talked about how, and this is true,
he
became so big that entire wine regions changed how they made wine. They wanted to specifically please him.
Yes. They wanted the 100 points. He awarded, I can't remember the producer off the top of my head now, but it was like 1997, and he awarded this wine 100 points, and the sales for that wine were just through the roof. So specifically in Napa, all these producers started using a lot more oak, picking a little riper, so that you had the big, juicy Napa Cab that is still very, very popular. A handful of producers didn't swing that way and stuck to their old school style of making Cab there. But anyway, I digress. As far as points and prices, there's a lot of really good value wine out there. I do a show on SOM TV called BYOB, where I go to Trader Joe's, Costco, and I pick out stuff usually for like $12 and under, and I give an honest review of it. And honestly, a lot of the time, it was really humbling because I haven't gone to Trader Joe's and bought wine in a long time because I've been very lucky to be gifted wine and be able to access all these other beautiful bottles. But it was humbling because I was like, damn, like, this is $6 and it's pretty good. I've had $30 bottles of wine that tasted like that. So there are some really good deals to be had out there. Trader Joe's is a great place for anybody who wants to explore weird varietals that they've never heard of or regions, because it's $6. What do you have to lose?
Well, SOM TV, I subscribe. I think I paid for the
something
year.
Something laughable.
But it's something like $6 a month or something. It's so worth it.
$5.99 a month or $49.99 a year. And we do promos all the time. We just ran a 50% off
It's so worth it because, you do these little videos like you just talked about, where if you're looking for recommendations, it's a great resource. And you get to see you.
And you get, that's very sweet, but you also get to see some of the most knowledgeable, dedicated, veterans of the wine and food industry.
I only watch you on there.
That's sweet.
I don't.
You should watch other people.
I won't watch
They're
any of the other
me.
Wine people. I just refuse.
Not the master sommeliers.
No, but in all honesty, SOM TV, if you're into wine at all, it's a very easy way to get in and be informed and learn and also get great recommendations. As you said, there's deals, right?
Like, there's deals. Yeah. There's so many. There's honestly just like, I really love the company that I work for. They produce some beautiful films as well. We just got nominated for another James Beard Award for a film called The Whole Animal, which talks about how we've really gotten away from specifically our meat. And we need to get back to patronizing family butchers and using the whole animal and honoring it and raising them with respect, not just these mass marketed produced chickens and cows. It's sad.
Another Beard Award.
I know.
Wow.
I had nothing to do with that one, though. So
this year, I think you're going to win. Because you didn't win.
I hope so. We didn't
You guys did not win last year, right?
No.
Was that your fault?
Probably.
Okay. Just making sure. No, I'm kidding. Of course not.
Usually is my
fault. All right. We got one more. There's one more that we're going to do on part one here. And that one is going to be from our friends at Rodney Strong.
Roddy Strong.
You want to tell us a little bit about Rodney Strong while I get our glasses?
In the spirit of pioneering. Well, this Chardonnay, they're another pretty old producer. And this Chardonnay is coming from the Chalk Hill Vineyard.
Tell us about that.
I don't know.
Okay. It's well, that's an AVA. Does anybody know what an AVA
is? Right,
it's an American Viticultural Area, which is a designation that they give. And
legal.
That, I think, very helpful in terms of if you find an AVA that you really enjoy, then you can seek out those wines that way. As Claire said, it's been around since 1959.
Yeah.
Rod Strong, the founder, was the first to plant Chardonnay up there in 1965. And then the Chalk Hill AVA came about in 1983. This is a 2020, another very dry growing season. Not a lot of rain at all going on there. So as Claire mentioned, the vines had to struggle.
They had to struggle.
And that's a good thing. And then what else we got? All right. I'm going to take the nose on this.
Yes. It's very, I like this note of... we're getting back. It's similar to, I would say it's an interesting, like if we were to smash two of the wines together, I would say it's kind of like the Kendall Jackson Vintners Reserved and the Chamisol, because I do get a little bit of that chalky, kind of flinty sea spray, but it also has that caramel Werther's original.
See, for me, I'm getting just the bright
crunchy
fruit.
What
maybe
fruit?
Like I'm clenching my hand. You know what I'm getting here? I'm walking around. I see a green apple. I yank that thing
the
off the,
apple.
What do they grow on?
Trees.
Trees.
The
you know what doesn't grow on trees?
Money.
My mom used to tell me all the time.
My dad also.
But apples do. So I yank a green apple gently off the tree. I went, I don't want to hurt the apple. And I take a bite and I get that. That's the flavor I'm getting here. You getting any of that?
Oh, I'm picking up on that. I'm picking up on what you're putting down. Pears, too.
It's tart. It's a little tart, and I like that.
I like that as well.
This is not what I associate with Chardonnay, at least in my brain.
What do you associate? The buttery oaky?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not getting that at all, which is good. And I'm totally fine with that.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know any of these winemakers? Justin Seidenfeld and Greg Morthol?
Not personally, no.
Have you ever been inside a Morthol?
No.
Scary in there. I'm kidding, Greg. Maybe it is. I don't know.
No, I haven't had the pleasure yet.
And this one's $30. All right.
Okay.
And as we said earlier, I think that's that range, 15 to 30, is where you're going to go. I mean, we can get into Chardonnays that are going to be $100. Like, what would be something like that? I'm sure Rodney Strong probably has some that are there, and so
some
does KJ.
Have. Yeah, there are definitely some producers that have their higher end stuff, but especially when you start getting into Burgundy.
Yes.
Those white wines, Chablis, like I mentioned earlier, you can find a pretty decent entry-level Chablis for like $20-$30. But once you start getting into the Premier Cru, the Grand Cru, and then start getting into like the rest of Burgundy, you know, your Mersault and your Chasson Montrachet, they get quite expensive.
Quite expensive. So I'm not going to go there. I'm going to stay right here in America with these sorts of wines. I mean, this one, this is just a solid wine to me. I think it's
It's strong.
What's the... Oh.
It's a strong
It
wine.
Is. It's got...
It's a Rodney
It's
strong.
Got girth. What are you making looking at me like that? I'm not... You know what I mean? Like, it's substantial.
It is a substantial...
Is girth the wrong
one.
Word? I guess girth maybe conjures images of something else. I meant, like, it's got, like, a foundation to it.
Yes, it absolutely does. It's a strongly built house.
Fuck it, I'm just going to say it. This wine has balls, okay?
Oh,
this wine's
behave.
Got balls.
It does.
All right, it does. I mean, this is a Chardonnay.
It's got some big ovaries on it.
It's a wine that's just like, hey, man, it announces itself as soon as you try it. I
nice
think some of the other ones
bright.
That we've had today were a little bit on the...
more timid. Not timid.
Vibrant. A little bit...
softer, more elegant.
Yeah, exactly.
This is elegant, but yes, they were maybe a little more sensual, and this one's a little bit more kick-ass.
See, I got you with the girth. I knew you'd bring you around as sensual. Anyway, all right. So this one, Rodney Strong Chardonnay, 2020 Chalk Hill, Sonoma County. This is a certified sustainable winery, which... I want
Very
to ask
important.
You that before we move on to part two in the next episode.
Yeah.
How much does that matter to you?
It matters a lot to me. I've started getting more and more into nature and sustainability. It's something that's pretty important to me. I'm not going to say I only drink exclusively like sustainable wines, but it helps when you see winemakers, and a lot of them take pretty sustainable measures. You don't see a lot of small producers really using, you know, Raid on their, you know, using these like really harsh chemicals. You still see it a bit, but a lot of producers are trying to be more cognizant of that. I think it's important to the larger wine drinking community and the market as well. I think a lot of people want the wines to be sustainable. There are a lot of confusions though between, like, they'll put, you know, organic, and people think that means, oh, they don't use sprays, but like you can still use sprays when it's organic. And then there's biodynamic and sustainable. So there are all these buzzwords, and I think sometimes that confuses or misleads the market.
It's like service charge on your bill. No, it is on the restaurant.
It's like, what does that mean?
I just did a piece last week on this on the show, people think when they see service charge, that means the servers are getting it. That's not true.
No,
it's at the restaurant's discretion. Don't get me started, Claire. What I will say is this: I did have a business idea. I'm with you. I'm all about sustainability and all that. I think politically we're probably aligned. But here's a business idea.
Okay.
What if we went the other direction to try to appeal to
the
Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world? We do the most offensive winery. Like, people pull up and we're like, we spray our we water our vines with aerosol cans.
We just spray people with pesticides as they come in.
You see Raid just walking around spraying Raid.
We'll call it Raid.
We serve our plastic bottles.
Single use
plastic.
Right,
we throw them right in the ocean when we're done.
50 points if you hit a turtle.
What's scary is that'd be one of the most successful wineries out there because people would align themselves with it, you know.
Maybe.
Ted Nugent, we blast Ted Nugent and Kid Rock. That's, our grapes listen to that.
Sounds good to me.
All right, that is one final.
Sounds like a fun winery.
I keep saying we're going to go, but let me ask you, there are wineries that do this. Do you think it makes any damn difference? I know wineries that play music to their vines. Do you think it matters?
I don't know. I can't conclusively say. I haven't done enough testing. But sure, why not? It puts me in a better mood.
Right?
If I knew that my grapes in these glass had been listening to Zeppelin their whole lives, I think I'd like it better.
Well, I think, you know, Cliff Lady up in Napa, Napa Valley, I know they were doing that. They were doing something, and they were playing Pink Floyd, and it was exactly what you said. Even if it doesn't impact it, the fact that what I'm drinking was these grapes were listening to Dark Side of the Moon.
That's pretty bitchin'.
I'm like, all right, I'm down with that. And on that note, maybe we'll go out with, can we get in 20 seconds of Dark Side of the Moon before they pull this episode? Claire Copey is on Somm TV.
I am.
All over that thing. And you can get it now, $50 for the year, $6 a month.
Pretty good deal.
Let me do the math.
Hundreds of hours.
Let me do some math. 6 times 12. So you would save $16 if you did it annually.
Pretty nuts.
All right. That's pretty nuts. I would do. And that's what I do. Yay. Do. You can follow Claire. Claire, CLAIRE _ COPPI on Instagram.
Yeah.
And we'll have some videos that we'll send Claire. She might repost them. She might not. You follow me at The Imbiber on Instagram. I am on Twitter, threatening to get off. It's going to happen. WWD _ podcast is the podcast. We're going to be back next episode, part two, where Claire and I will explore 5 more wines, part two of our summer wine extravaganza. Wines to be drunk at what time of day, Claire?
Dusk. The greenity is on the grass. The lunatic is on the grass. Remembering